This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
PGA Nation, we are back, and we are back this week with the Rocket Mortgage Classic. An interesting tournament. I would call it a JV field, but a still fun tournament for us to break down this week. I'm excited to do it, but before we do, big congratulations are in order for team audience in taking down the draft cast last week. Team audience, I'm actually going to give you a moment to talk trash yourselves for getting through with the W for the next 5 seconds. It's the audience time. Speak up now, guys. Be loud, because right now it's your turn. You are the winners. And, of course, your leader, Zach Jeffers, says absolutely no one. So I guess you guys got nothing. But, hey, guys, great draft. Honestly, you guys drafted a great team last week. It was some really solid picks, deserved a W, got it. We'll pick the order tonight. The rule for tonight will be the first person in the audience to post their preferred draft order for tonight. That's the order we will go with while we wait for that. Spence, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk about this tournament. I think it's a very interesting board where I've written this in articles and I've talked about it on shows already. There are three specific factors about this venue that everybody's going to build into a model. And when you start getting that, you get concentrated ownership that's going to land in a lot of areas. Doesn't mean that they're not good plays. A lot of those names will be some of the best targets on the board. But really interesting price scale that we've gotten. You look at some of these events where Scotty is over $13,000. And all of a sudden now we have played it down into the $5,000 range and Tom Kim's only 11 grand. So I think it's very easy to make any build that you almost want this week. And it's why everybody's landing in the same spots. But as I said, it's going to be a fun tournament. Every time we go to Detroit, I feel like I have the ability to wear all this retro cool stuff on the show. Like last night I wore a throwback Grant Hill jersey, today rocking the M&M shirt. So everything in Detroit is always a little better.
I love that you theme your outfit to the course that we have reached out. It's fantastic. That's great. David, how you doing tonight?
I'll take myself off mute first. I'll keep it professional around here. Good, mate. Good. I love that last week there was absolute just hatred between Joel and the audience. And just so much smack talk over his victory and how getting free of the audience was his key to success. And then the audience was having none of it. You know, they snapped right back at the Travelers Championship, drafted a great lineup, took down Least Master Flex, as Zach has just titled you, and get to see the draft tour this week. So, yeah, I love the smack talk. I love the banter. We've got the best audience in the business, I think, on this show. And very pleased to have a golf tournament that Scottie Scheffler's not playing in, because I think that just adds to a more interesting way to build DFS lineups and interest in terms of betting boards, you're not just fighting for place money, you're fighting for potentially the outright winner and finding a bit of value. So we were pretty close last week. We had Akshay Bhatia at 60-1 within the tips. Did very, very well. Secured another top five for the first round lead bets for myself, which is the third tournament in a row that's happened, that we've had the guy in second or third in the first round. So I'm very excited to see what this week brings.
I love it. It's going to be an interesting week for sure, especially when you think about the difference in field and how that's like for building. Also, it is a cut event, so it's like a Watertown field with a lot of guys in it. So it's going to look different. You know, this is a unique season we're having golf with, you know, more guys on live, some of these watered down fields. But I think, you know, the tournaments are still there. And I think, you know, depending on how you want to play, a lot of people would say there's an edge to tournaments like this one with the watered down field. So that's what we're here for, to break it down. And Spence, who every week will give you the best, most in-depth course breakdown in the industry, will break it down for us this week. Spence, what are you looking for in Michigan this week?
We're heading to Detroit for the sixth iteration of this tournament. We've seen an average winning score of 23 under par during the opening five attempts. You get wide open layout here at the property. A lot of that has turned into this bomb and gouge mindset. Many of the blockages from trees or the methodically placed bunkers can be taken out of play for those with extra length off the tee. You do get a venue here that has 4-inch thick rough throughout that's supposed to heighten the challenge. I found it really difficult to see it accomplish that goal, since it really just adds to the distance narrative for those who can carry the ball further with the driver in hand. Donald Ross designed the venue in 1914. Ross is always known for these complicated runoff areas around the green that are supposed to add to the difficulty. You get a much more subdued version this tournament than we've gotten in the past, like marginal undulation, several tiers that will have to be traversed at times, but medium-sized greens, this is not going to be the same test that we saw at Pinehurst with the Donald Ross course. So at the end of the day, it kind of goes back to what I talked about at the beginning. There are three specific factors that everybody seems to be building in model. How far can you hit it off the tee? How are you with your short iron proximity? Can you make putts? Golfers have rendered nearly a 5% increase in dispersion of scoring with the flat stick. The distance here, I've talked about, you can hear that on any single show. And then when we talk about the short iron proximity, just under a 10% uptick in shots have occurred from within 150 yards. That includes a 17% mark overall from 0 to 100. It's about as high as you're going to see on any course yearly. So it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to be perfect in all those factors. And anytime we get a birdie fest where putting ends up coming to the forefront of the discussion, you always get a more volatile nature there, where it's like those classic birdie fests to where there's just more volatility into the mix. But, you know, look, I think there's a lot of different ways that we can get unique in trying to leverage ownership. And as I said at the beginning of the show, it doesn't mean that the popular plays don't have merit in lineups, but there's really soft pricing throughout, in my opinion. And there are going to be situations where we can create leverage by just getting a little unique and different in spots.
Well, that's what the DraftCast will do because of its unique nature. You're going to have to find some different leverage plays to be able to draft for a lineup. So we'll get right into it tonight. For those of you that might be new to the show, we're going to pull up the draft board and we're going to draft four teams. This works like your typical fantasy football draft, and that snake style. The audience, you guys were able to pick the draft order, and the order for tonight is going to be audience first, Spencer second, David third, me fourth. I'll have two and then we'll go back. The caveat to the draft gets is you do need to stay within a DraftKings salary. So you cannot just take all the best players. You have to be able to actually afford each guy that you draft. The audience, since you are first, you are on the clock. So make sure your nominations are in. We'll need a double to lock in that first pick. Let's get that going. While we wait for the nominations and the final pick to be confirmed, I'll start with you, David, and not to give anything away, is there a player in the field this week that you would have as a hands down number one pick in this spot?
Not really. And I mean, I'm kind of happy to be in my usual spot of third pick in the draft orders, where I tend to end up, probably a result of it. I haven't won a draft cast for a few weeks now. So I end up getting slotted into number three. But I think this is the kind of week where the top of the board is not overly strong. And so I can kind of defer actually to being the third spot, see whoever audience and spends what I take here and potentially go and find some value. I think it's actually a week where, given the volatility of the tournament, it's going to be extremely low scoring. As Spence mentioned, you're going to have to make a lot of putts in order to keep up with, you know, winning total probably in that minus 25 to minus 30 kind of range in most instances. So happy to embrace some of the volatility and probably just take a route of avoiding ownership is really just one key way to be successful this week.
All right. Well, with the first pick, the audience is locked in on Tom Kim. I mean, Tom Kim looked spectacular last week. He's the most expensive golfer on the board. I think he's probably the best golfer in the field, so I think it's a good pick. But I think strategically, there's reasons why people won't play him this week. I think, you know, he's coming off a really good effort. He's the most expensive guy on the board. He hasn't been really consistently getting you top fives every week, and he's going to come with a really high ownership tag. So, you know, he'll definitely be in my player pool. I will have some shares of him. I don't think I'm going to be overweight on Tom Kim this week. Spencer, I'd love your take. Are you interested in Tom Kim?
Here's the way I see it with ownership, and let's see where it trends over the next 24 hours. But not to give away too much on the show, but if you look at the 8,800 and up range, so that's like Aaron Ryan up. If you remove Ricky Fowler and Will Zalatoris, who are going to be the two sub 10% options, every other player in my model is somewhere between 18% owned to Tom Kim, who I have at 28% owned. So to me, it's a pick your poison spot here. Like, if you think Tom Kim is the best player in the tournament, he's number one in my model. I have no issues for anybody that wants to start a build with him. I do tend to think that he's the best player in the field. And if you compare him to a Cameron Young, for example, that $300 difference, I'd probably rather get up to Tom Kim if ownership is going to be within 5 to 8% there. So I don't know. I mean, Joel, it just comes down to a pick your poison position, in my opinion.
I would agree. And I think that makes sense from the standpoint of, because it's a watered down field, you know, there's clearly an upper echelon. I think you said it right. It's about 8,800 and up is like that kind of echelon field. And it really wouldn't make sense to not play at least one, if not two, of those guys in your lineup, because I do think they're kind of a head and shoulders above. And so that's why there's a lot of ownership going up there. So to Spencer's point, it's pick your poison, pick your way of how you want to build your lineup. If you want to go with Tom Kim and then get different elsewhere, or if you want to go with some of those other guys up top and maybe spread out your ownership that way, either one could make sense this week. All right, Spencer, you're up with your pick here. Where are you leaning with your first pick in this draft?
I don't have a massive lean either. It's kind of the same answer that David gave a second ago at the very top of the board. So I'm going to let these decisions get made for me. I'm going to go a little bit lower down the slate and try to find value here. This is a golfer that, when I built my model to start 2024, he was a projected, and this is every single player of LIV golfers and PGA Tour players, this was a golfer for me that was a top 25 player in expectation coming into this year. And we've got nothing of that sort, if we're being honest. Like, remove the two early top 10 showings that he's produced. He's yet to have a top 15 finish in 12 starts since then. That includes four missed cuts and additional four finishes that are 50th or worse. Here's the thing with Nikolai Højgaard that I really like. And I thought he was the best value on the board when we're talking from DFS or inside of the betting market. One of the things that he has here is he's had an inaccuracy off the tee this year that's held him back in a lot of these spots. This wide open nature, the bomb and gouge that we're talking about, he was number one in my model when I combined distance, proximity, and putting into one grade. It also found an upside for him, as I talked about, to use his length off the tee to overcome some of those recent questionable returns with the driver. There was not a golfer, and this is including Tom Kim here, and as everybody knows who follows my sheet, you very rarely, and I don't think Højgaard's the prototypical answer here, but you very rarely find these golfers that are this far down the board that are going to pop in the capacity that Højgaard did. I ran seven categories this week. In six of the categories, Højgaard landed inside the top 10 for me, And in five of those categories, he landed inside the top three. The only person that equaled that was Tom Kim. I think Nikolai Højgaard, while it's going to be a boom or bust option here at the end of the day, I love his ceiling performance that he could potentially provide here. With the top of the board not necessarily having a route that I must go, I'm going to lock in value and I'll let everything come from there.
Wow, there you have it. And it's confirmed by the facial reaction. Stolen pick from David. David, I can tell you were in pain, so I want to get your take. It looks like you wanted Højgaard. Were you looking to take him with your first pick here?
Yes, I was, Joel. And that was heart-wrenching to experience that. I was so sure that I'd get to Nikolai Højgaard in spot number three here. I wasn't sure if you were considering him, so I did want to take him with the third pick in the draft. And a lot of that comes down to what Spencer's just said. He's got tons of distance off the tee. Obviously, he had a landmark victory towards the end of last year when he won the DP World Tour Championship, their season-ending event. We were on him that week as well, and he's got that that ability to go very, very low. What we've also seen the last few events is his approach metrics have really turned around. He gained over four strokes approach at a very difficult US Open at Pinehurst. He also quietly finished 16th at the Masters, which I think a lot of people missed. And he's getting to a spot where I think that this is one of the best course fits for Nikolai Højgaard that we've had so far this season. I'd compare it to a course on the DP World Tour Alhambra, which is host of the Ras Al Khaimah Championship, where he won, again, a very low-scoring event, but a tournament where there's tons of space off the tee, and you're going to need to make a lot of putts to achieve victory. So he was a winner there. Ryan Fox was also a winner at that golf tournament as well. A very, very similar profile, I think, to what we're going to see this week in Detroit. So gutted, absolutely gutted to miss out on Nikolai. But look, just credit to Spence, I guess, for identifying from my comments of wanting to go find value that this was a very good space to take Nikolai in the first round.
Spence, great job getting a steal early. David, you've got to pivot. You got your first pick here. Where are you going to go with your first pick in this draft?
Well, in lieu of Nikolai Højgaard, I guess I'll take who I was going to take if I got him on the wrap round, and I'll work out what I'm going to do with this build from here now that Spencer's absolutely ruined my draft. So I will take Cam Davis with my first selection, who I would have taken had he made his way back to me. Big things were really expected of Cam Davis in 2024. We'd seen a lot of training metrics from him that looked very, very promising, particularly towards the end of last year, where he went on a run of just top 10s in about seven or eight tournaments in a row. He arrives at a golf course where he's won previously, followed that up with the 14th and 17th. And if we are looking for a tournament where it is a bit of a bomber's paradise, we obviously know that Cam Davis has plenty of distance off the tee. I'm not too worried about his performances at the Travelers, the US Open, and the Memorial, just given all three of those tournaments are kind of more focused on driving accuracy than they are in distance. And this is very much the polar opposite. It's one of the least penal spots off the tee. And he's a golfer with tons of upside at what I think is a very, very cheap price at 7,200. I also thought he was going to be a lot more owned than he is. I'm getting 10% ownership at the moment compared to, say, Nikolai Højgaard was about 12.5. So I was surprised to see him being cheaper than Nikolai, obviously a very popular name, and getting less ownership as well. So happy to take him, although I'd much rather would have taken Nikolai, and can confirm have passed at least three kidney stones in this time.
Well, there you have it. Cameron Davis, 7,200 value going off the board early tonight. I'm actually not on Cameron Davis this week. I certainly see the upside, you know, and maybe the more I think and talk with you guys, I might come back around to him. But I'd love to get your take, Spencer. Are you playing Cam Davis this week?
I think it's the same general theory for the most part behind the Nikolai Højgaard play. If you look at the recent form that David just alluded to, you're not going to see anything that he's really provided since, I guess, the Masters, if we want to go back to that. But three consecutive top 17 finishes at this course. I hit him here in 2021 when he won this event. The ability to bomb and gouge is right in his wheelhouse. And the price tag is frankly too cheap at 7,200. And it's kind of what happened on this board with a lot of these names, in my opinion. Like, there's a lot of these golfers in this lower sevens, even into the sixes, where, you know, we could have put them in the high $7,000 range and maybe even like the low 8,000s and gotten a very similar expectation from them there. And, you know, in theory, it probably would have been better if Højgaard and Cameron Davis would have been more expensive, just because it would have gotten some people off of them from the recent form. But I think this is one of those spots where it's looking for upside, and Cameron Davis certainly has as much of that as almost anybody that you can find down here.
Ooh, I love it. I love it. All right. I got two. I do think my approach this week works best in a more balanced build. And when I mean by balanced build, you can still get some guys at the top. You just doesn't have to go, you know, above 10K. And by doing so, I'm going to start by taking Akshay Bhatia, and I'm going to pair him here with Keith Mitchell. Now, you know, Akshay Bhatia obviously looked great last week, got you a top five finish. He's just been playing really good golf. In terms of this field, you know, I think he's easily a top five talent in the field. You're paying about, yeah, you think he's the fifth highest priced guy. So I think the pricing is totally fair, but I think the upside is there for him to go ahead and win the tournament, especially if he makes putts like he did at the Travelers. We know his around the green game is a mixed bag. He gained five strokes at the US Open, has otherwise not been great, but his approach play is very strong. His off the tee has been excellent. He can make putts. I think Bhatia's game has really come rounding out. And Keith Mitchell is just playing great golf right now. And this is the type of field that I expect Keith Mitchell to show up and have a really good result. It's a little bit of a watered down field at 8,500. He is one of the better golfers. He's excellent off the tee. In some of those proximity metrics, he's going to grade really well. But the most impressive thing about Keith Mitchell is since the Phoenix Open in February, he's gained strokes on approach every single tournament he's played in. That's 11 tournaments, maybe 12 since then. So his approach numbers have been fantastic. He's off the tee. I mean, he's also gained strokes off the tee in every tournament since February 11th as well. So he's really striking the ball excellent. If he can make some putts, I think Keith Mitchell can go out and win this tournament this week. With that being said, David, you got the next pick, but I would love your take on both Akshay Bhatia and Keith Mitchell this week.
Yeah, both in consideration for me this week. I think Bhatia has narrowed a lot in betting markets, and obviously you can't then adjust your DFS price afterwards, right? So the fact that there's sharp money moving that direction, I think is really promising. He's added an element of consistency to his game. Obviously, as I mentioned, he was within our betting tips last week. He was one off the lead going into the final round. Shot minus one in the final round there on Sunday, playing with Scheffler and Tom Kim, which I can forgive given, I think, the moment, and also playing with someone like Scotty Scheffler right there next to you the whole round was a bit indifferent, finish minus one, but he was right there throughout that tournament, and the consistency we've seen from him. We also just know Bhatia has the ability to go and shoot like a minus eight, a minus nine, a minus 10. Like, he has that ability to absolutely pop and get very, very hot with his putters. So the combination of the long driving distance, driving accuracy, his ability on approach, and then the ability to get red hot with his putter is very promising. And in regards to Keith Mitchell, I am so surprised at his ownership. Like, because objectively, like in the standard of the field, he's cheap at 8,500, particularly when you put him up against like Ricky Fowler at 9,000. But he's the third lowest owned for me above 8,500 in terms of ownership projections. And I thought given his price, he actually would have attracted a lot more ownership at a golf course that I think actually really suits him. So I think they're both very, very good picks, both players that I would have considered. And was actually hoping to take Bhatia with my second pick. So that's double back-to-back stolen picks from me.
You love a stolen pick. Always makes you feel good there. But by going value with your first pick, you left yourself with plenty of salary left to go get someone. Are you going to spend up here with your second pick? Where are you going here?
Yeah, I am going to go in and spend a little bit of salary here. I probably would have gone Bhatia over this player with the expectation that he probably wouldn't get back to me. But I do think I need to have at least one of these guys kind of over 9K. They just given that they do possess a decent amount of win equity. So I'm going to go ahead and take Simon Jagger, obviously a very, very strong driver of the golf ball, which we all know and love about his game, but also very, very good on approach. And he's just gained over 4 strokes on approach at the Travis Championship. He had a good US Open where he finished 21st, won the Texas Children's Open, Houston Open, sorry, earlier this year, defeating Scottie Scheffler, which is a pretty impressive feat in the world of golf these days. So he's got a good record here. He's finished 5th and 9th in the last 2 appearances, and then another Donald Ross design at Sedgefield. He's finished 13th and 14th, and another tournament that is a bit of a birdie kind of wedge fest that you're going to see this week. So do think he's a very viable option. Not too concerned about his ownership. I'm seeing like 18%, which of those top end guys is actually one of the lower options.
There you have it. Steven here, who's shown, especially in these watered down tournaments, he's played up and had some really good showings. I think he is a nice option in that 9K range. Spencer, you got your second pick here, but would love your take on Jaeger this week.
Lowest owned player for me, 8,800 and above, and I keep going to the Zalatoris Fowler. Remove them from the mix for 1 second. He would be the lowest owned name. I think there's a lot of safety around his profile. It's going to come down to, can he make putts? If he makes putts, the ball striking here, from what we've seen historically from him on this course and on similar venues, I think there's a lot to like. So I have absolutely no issues with anybody who wants to play Steven Jaeger. I'm going to continue, and this isn't what I was planning to do to start this show, but I'm going to take another very popular $7,000 golfer. I guess my one concern with this name is he is coming overseas from the Netherlands. And I know he's expressed that he is a little bit tired from that trip, but he loves this course and this is why he's here. But I'm going to take Matt Wallace at 7,400 inside of the top 10 of my model. When you look at expected strokes gained total for this course, 2 top 12 finishes during the 3 times that he's played it. And a lot of the statistical metrics, while my model's not usually this high on him, I think there's a reason why it is here. Like, you take the recent performances, you merge it in with the course history, and then you take the statistical data that's popping him in my model. Even at, like, I see 13% right now, and I see a very similar ownership for Højgaard at about 12%, but these are two names for me that should have been $1,000 or higher more expensive. So I think I'm getting such a rebate in their price tag that I'm willing to get a little bit more on the ownership front here. And I'm not necessarily, like, if you're going to find yourself in a spot where you're playing a popular mid-tier player, you have to be very above the market on those names to make sure you can get overweight. And both of those two options are top 10 in my model this week. So I'll continue the value route with Matt Wallace.
I like Matt Wallace. I usually like Matt Wallace. You know, the one thing that turns me off to Matt Wallace, to your point, Spencer, is ownership. You know, he's usually a sneaky, unowned guy that we go after in a bigger field, where here he's, you know, going to be higher owned. He's still cheaper. So I think, you know, in a watered down field, that's why we like the upside. And that final ownership number, don't forget to check out Steven's article Wednesday night to see what that ends up looking like. Will be a determining factor of how much exposure I end up with on the Matt Wallace side. Audience, you got 2 here. Let's get both those nominations and lock them in for the turn. But David, we'd love your take this week on Matt Wallace.
I agree with you somewhat in terms of the ownership. I do think there's a little bit concerning for Matt Wallace, as Spence mentioned, given the travel factor as well. I had Matt Wallace at 20-1 last week at the KLM Open. He ended up closing at 15s as the favorite, so a lot of money did come his way. And he was positioned really, really well going into the final round, and again, just didn't have a final round that was worthy of note, basically. Shooting 2 over in the last round at a pretty low scoring course. The moment maybe got a little bit too big for him. But look, if we do think this is comparable to the DP World Tour Championship in terms of course fit, which I do think is a good correlation. Nikolai Højgaard won there. Matt Wallace was 2nd there. We famously were on both of them that week when we had a 1-2 finish at the DP World Tour in terms of our betting selection. So he does have the ability to go low. I think the nice thing about the pricing for him here is that you don't actually need him to go out and win the tournament. And Matt Wallace has had difficulties getting across the line on the PGA Tour. but you don't need him at that price to go and win it at 7,400. Like, if you get a top 20, top 15, or Matt Wallace here, that's going to be sufficient with the way that Spencer's obviously going to build the rest of his lineup here.
Boom. There you have it. Matt Wallace endorsed. The audience first pick is in, and it's Taylor Pendrith, which for me is a very good pick. I like Pendrith. Listen, his ownership is going to be high. We know that. But he is playing so well. I think he is worth every dollar of his price tag. If not, he could have been higher. And it's the consistency with that putter. He's going to gain strokes putting. He's been pretty consistent with his iron play more recently. The combination of the two here, I think, is going to ensure him a pretty good result at 9,600. I was looking to get Pendrith on my team. I definitely endorse that pick. While we wait for the final, oh, it's Aaron Rye, another guy I was looking to take. So I'm going to be in scramble mode in this next round. Both guys were going to be pretty popular, but I think both guys make a lot of sense for this week. Would love to get your take, Spence. Are you on Pendrith or Rye this week?
I bet Taylor Pendrith at 40-1 when the board opened. He's been pushed more down into the 30-1 range now. A lot of what he's done has been with the putter, but when you look specifically at easy scoring courses, number one in my model there. He's also number one in an additional area of the seven categories I ran. So he has the high-end marks. I think with like these $8,000 names, Rye being one of them, there's going to be a lot of ownership with them. But I don't really have anything negative to say about Aaron Rye, unfortunately. Like, my model likes him a ton inside of the top 10 for me in all iterations of how I built it. The overall rank was in the top five. I think there's a large safety return from him that I'm getting inside of my sheet. There is some negative trajectory for upside, but even if you look at what he's done in the outright market, it's the same answer as Pendrith, where those are two names that opened at 40-1 that have been pushed down to 30-1. So clearly there's influential money enough. I don't think that that's just square money pushing that down to get it to that territory. But, you know, I think when you look at the audience's team in particular, that is a very common build that I think you're going to see across the board. This is where the audience will now have to figure out a way to get different with this lineup if you're going to enter it in large field contests.
There you have it. Audience, it is popular start, but you kept three more picks. You can go really different with the last three and make that work. I think those are three solid picks. But to Spencer's point, you will want to get different to finish this draft out. Spencer, you have plenty of money to spend. 8,800 per pick to go. Where are you going with your third pick?
I am talking about getting different, and I'm going to select a name here that's one of the most popular options on the board. So I'm not necessarily following that own advice with it. And I think I only need to find a spot or two to get different, and we can do that later in the draft. But a very similar answer to the Aaron Rye discussion that was had. There is a player for me that is a top five projected safety play in this tournament that has top 10 projected win equity in my sheet. That's Maverick.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
Menards is your electrical headquarters. We carry all the tools and testers you need for any electrical job. Stack up your toolbox with Southwire electrical products today. Right now, save big money on Southwire electrical tools, testers, cable ties, wire, and cable. Shop our huge selection in-store at Menards. Ranked number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Save big money at
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Rick McNeely at 8,900. Three consecutive top 23 finishes. He has two top 21s here in three attempts. We have really seen him over, I would say, the past 2.5 months since returning, just really produce one quality finish after the next here. I think there's a lot to like about him. Even at this 21% ownership mark, I need it to be higher than that according to my model for there not to be value there. So I think we're getting a very neutral leverage spot, but a high-end return when it comes to his actual price tag compared to what my model expects from him. So I will take Maverick McNeely at 8,900.
Well, I'll hit you with the truth here. I am getting crushed on these last couple of picks. These were all the guys I was lining up. I like the Maverick McNeely pick. I think he's another guy. I like kind of staying in this range. I think you're different. You're, you know, Keith Mitchell, Steven Yeagers, Maverick McNeely, Aaron Rye. You can build a pretty balanced lineup in this kind of high 8K, low 9K range with all guys that have plenty of upside. So that is my target. I'm with you. I think Maverick McNeely's been playing great golf, and this watered down field looks like a really good spot for him. David, would love your take. Are you on Maverick McNeely this week as well?
Yeah, look, I do think that we need to respect what Maverick McNeely has been doing. We've always known he's a very, very good putter. Obviously, he plays at TPC Summerlin. So if we're thinking the Shrine is very low scoring golf course with plenty of space off the tee, is going to be corollary to what we're going to see this week. Obviously, he's got tons of experience on that golf course as well. But the pleasing thing for him is, as we know, great putter. But the approach metrics have just really, really picked up. And so he's gained on approach in four of his last five starts where his individual events. Obviously, we can discount the Zurich a bit because that's just a weird event. And the other pleasing thing for him as well is in four tournaments in a row, he's actually gained on driving accuracy as well. So all of that suggests to me that his swing looks like it's made some really, really good improvements alongside the fact that he's already got an excellent short game. So I do think that's a very promising recipe returning to a golf course that he obviously plays very well at.
Boom. I am with you there. All right. David, you got 8,300 per pick to go. You're on your third pick here. Where are you going with this next pick?
Yeah, and had to change my draft strategy a little bit since Spence were in my draft with that first pick of Nikolai Højgaard in the first round. So I'm going to go and take Alex Noren at 10,200 and only 16% ownership, which I find very, very surprising. And I think a lot of that comes down to what Spence mentioned at the top of the show about the course breakdown, that this has had a tendency to be a bomb and gouge approach. But then when you look through these leaderboards, there's obviously also been a number of golfers who have found a lot of fairways, but are also very, very good putters who have managed to find their way inside the top 10. And if we're all operating on a basis that bomb and gouge is the route to go, we all just take the Taylor Pendriths and Patrick Rogers and Cam Davis of the world, we all end up with the same lineups. And then you miss out on the value with leverage of guys like Alex Noren, who, if Alex Noren came out and finished top 10, I don't actually think many people would be surprised. He's a very, very good golfer in terms of his ability playing the wind, his ability on approach, but particularly with his putter, he can get absolutely red hot. And we've seen that at a number of tournaments this year in low-scoring events, probably most notably at the Byron Nelson when he finished third. And he's finished fourth and ninth here in two of the last three tournaments. So his last two appearances both being top nines, and you're getting a golfer at 16%, I think largely just because of the way that people have bought in their course profiles.
You know, Alex Noren has been having a very solid season. I was starting to think about pivoting to him here in this waterbound field. I think there's plenty of upside. Plus, he's played here here before. He likes this course, so it does look like a good spot for him. Spence, what say you on Alex Noren this week?
I think he's safe. I think if we're looking at these $10,000 golfers, there's probably other routes that I would prefer going when directly comparing, but I think he's a safe name, which what David talked about a second ago, he is going to very likely be the lowest owned option from Taylor Pendrith and up, and substantially so when comparing him to a lot of these names. Like when he's 10% less owned than Tom Kim, it does make an opinion that has to be formed one way or another. I'm probably not going to get Tim, but good course history, good form this season. He's a golfer that I've been on a lot over the past 2 years. Just don't know if I'm going to get Tim in this spot here.
Makes sense. All right, I got two. My game plan had to adjust after the last two rounds and a lot of the guys I was planning on taking. So I originally was saying I was going to try and stay really balanced. That option was taken away from me. So I am going to go up to the top here, and I'm going to take Cameron Young with this third pick. He showed some life last week at the Travelers with a ninth place finish. You know, he's, you know, almost the epitome of the bombing gouge approach. He's going to be able to bomb it. You know, the question mark is going to be, can he make some putts? If he can find a way to make some putts this week, I think he will have a really good week and should be able to show. I like the fact that it's a watered down field. It's ability for him to come out, have a good result, regain some confidence. So in terms of upside, it's certainly there. And even though you're paying a little bit of a hefty price, I certainly can get behind that. I'm also going to pair him with Adam Svensson with my next pick. Uh-oh, Svensson, is that a stolen pick?
Yeah.
Yes. Now, listen, I like Adam Svensson a lot. I mean, he's fantastic off the tee. His approach numbers, you know, his tee to green numbers are going to look really good. He hasn't missed the cut since March, but he can really go off the rails on the putter. And we've seen some weeks where he's lost. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, he was only lost six strokes putting. I don't think these are going to be conditions like the U.S. Open putting-wise. He gained a stroke putting last week at the Travelers. If we can get a neutral putter or even some positive putting, I think you get another really good result from Adam Svensson this week. So certainly upside in the 7K range. David, I'd love your take. Are you interested at all in Adam Svensson or Cameron Young this week?
Yeah, Joel going firmly for Team No Putt there with both of his selections. Which is great to see. My concern with Cam Young, I do think Cam Young wins on the PGA Tour. Don't get me wrong. But whenever a golfer comes out and does something like shoots a 59 in a signature event and a lot of people see it, it's like just a recipe for a guy to get steamed for ownership as the week goes on. It's like a situation where people just go like, oh yeah, Cam Young had like a 59, and they just chuck him into a lineup at a course, especially where he finished second last year. And my question comes at someone who you're paying $10,700 for. Ideally, you want this guy to go out and win the tournament or finish top five. And we've consistently seen Cam Young put himself in positions to win tournaments and then fail to get across the line. Maybe this is the week he does it. I think the ideal situation for him is he's like 3-4 shots off the lead entering Sunday and then goes out and just shoots a very, very good round and posts a number and nobody can catch him. I think that's his best chance to get that win done. Because earlier this year, the Dubai Desert Classic, we saw the exact same thing where it was like every time Cam Young was like in contention on the Sunday to win the tournament, he found a way to throw it away. With Svensson, the concern for me comes with the putter. I do think he's an option to potentially get a little bit different. In his favor, the greens this week are the exact same as they were last week at the Travelers, and he gained strokes putting. So if he's found something on greens that he likes, there should be some correlation to what we're going to see on the greens this week.
There you have it. All right. Some great information to think about. David, you got your fourth pick here. $7,700 per pick left. Where are you heading?
Yeah, and kind of continuing down this route of being a mostly balanced build for the most part, I'm going to take a golfer who, again, I was surprised to see him as low owned as he is. I'm getting 7.5% at the moment on Erik van Rooyen. And I think a lot of that comes down to the fact he's coming in off a missed cut, a 42nd, a 53rd. It's not sparkling form that he's coming in here with. But bear in mind, Pinehurst was very, very favored towards people who were good on driving accuracy. It was also incredibly tough greens, and I can always forgive a miscut from someone like Eric Van Rooyen, who we're not expecting to be super competitive at something like US Open. But what really puzzled me is the correlation to the tournament he did win in Mexico, Al Cardenal, which was very, very similar, I think, in terms of metrics that are going to be required this week in terms of victory. Winning score there was minus 27. He managed to keep up with that pace of play there as well. And if you look at the Myrtle Beach Classic, which, to be honest, was, like, in terms of strength of field, fairly similar, was a driver-heavy golf course. It really favoured long drivers. Chris Goddard won. Davis Thompson was right there. Ryan Fox was right there. Really favoured those bombers. He was fourth there just a few starts before, if we discount these recent tournaments, which have been a lot more focused on driving accuracy. So I do think Eric Van Rooyen's an improved golfer than he was this time a year ago. So to get him at low ownership at a decent salary saving, I think is an interesting option.
I think this tournament is really intriguing for a guy like EVR, because it feels like this is one where he could pop, or, you know, his talent has a little bit more upside in this watered down field. He wasn't on my radar, but he's definitely someone I could be talked into. Spence, you have your fourth pick here. Plenty of money to spend, but would love your take first on EVR.
I'm not going to get there on Van Rooyen. The upside answer that Van Rooyen possesses at limited ownership would be the intrigue behind this discussion. That part I can get behind with it, but I guess I'll end up regretting going this route with my pick, but it's a decent segue into the choice that I'm going to make here. So we'll have it for the show. And if it ends up biting me and I end up losing one of my players, we'll deal with that fact at the end here. But I have a head-to-head matchup this week where I took on Eric Van Rooyen, and I did it with, funny enough, David's boy in Ryan Fox. I really like Ryan Fox here. For me, like, we're looking, and we've talked about a lot of these $8,000 and up names where there's tons of popularity, rightfully so, in a lot of these options, but tons of popularity around these names. And then you get Ryan Fox, who's playing the best golf that he's played the entire year. All the statistical data is now starting to trend in the right direction for him, inside of the top 15 of my model. And he's 8% owned when every other golfer that we're talking about above him, other than Fowler and Zalatoris, are going to be over 10%. McIntyre's 12, and every other name's like 15% plus. So Ryan Fox's ability to hit the ball long, his ability to make putts and spurts, and his ability to play with his short iron play, this is kind of that prototypical recipe to find success here. I don't have an outright ticket on him. I do think he's a very, I don't want to even say a dark horse name here. He's 50-1 in the market, but I think he's one of those very interesting names there at 50-1 to where if he gets across the finish line on Sunday and he wins on the PGA Tour, I will not be shocked. This is a very nice course fit for him.
Interesting pick. We're definitely going to have to break that down in 1 second. Audience, you got two here. So get your nominations in. Let's get the lock button in for those two picks on this turn. While we wait for that, I like Ryan Fox this week as well. I think he's a little bit underpriced. I think the points that you made, he can bomb. He can get hot with that putter. But I really want to hear from you, David. Your boy, Ryan Fox, are you playing this week or not?
It's an interesting question on Ryan Fox, because I agree that the course really fits him. Like, he can spray the ball off the tee. That's fine. There's correlation to Alhambra, which is a tournament that he's won. Nikolai Højgaard's won. So now Spencer's got both of those guys in there too. And the interesting thing with Detroit Golf Club is you end up with this weird kind of gap in terms of the approach metrics. There's a huge number of shots over 250 yards. Obviously, Ryan Fox has the ability to go for that because of his huge driving distance and his clubhead speed. But then you've got disproportionate number shots in 125 and less. And there's the kind of like gray area between 125 to 200 where you don't get many approach shots. And the good thing with Foxy is he's very, very good with his wedges as well as his long irons. And he can actually struggle with his mid irons a little bit in the middle there. So I think he's intriguing from that perspective. The only thing that's kind of put me off Foxy this week is he's on record as saying he doesn't necessarily like these birdie fests as much as he does a difficult case where he can kind of grind it out a little bit more. So I do think that he plays well. I would not be surprised if he finishes top 40. My question just comes, does he actually get towards that like minus 25 to minus 30 mark? And at 8,200, it's kind of entering that realm where I want him to be in contention at that kind of price. And I'm just not sure that I think he might just be better suited at a course where he can make a couple of bogeys and kind of get away with it because every golfer is making bogeys. Whereas this week, it's like you just got to go out and shoot low. And he's on record of saying like he doesn't like these places where he wakes up and he's like already seen people at minus 8 on the leaderboard.
There you have it. We have the matchup bet that Spencer already mentioned, that he's targeting Evan Ruyen. David doesn't like Fox. Is there going to be a wager this week?
I won't put up money on it because I do actually think that Ryan Fox is possibly a better selection than Erik van Rooyen. It's just the way I'm going to round out the rest of my lineup in terms of the budget that I need, that I couldn't take Foxy. But yeah, I don't think that. Yeah, I'm so confused with what to do with Fox. if I'm completely honest.
I also think that's a very fair argument that David made about Ryan Fox. Like, there is a negative movement in my model for upside with him. When I'm looking at a golfer here that's inside of the top 15 of my model at limited ownership where I'm creating the leverage, I was willing to take that chance there, but he does move outside of the top 20 for me in upside, and that's just like one or two categories pushing him in the wrong direction. I think there's enough safety in the profile, which David talked about, to where the ownership's low enough. If we end up reaching a position here, though, where this ownership moves into like the 12, 13, 14, 15% range, I'm very okay moving away from Ryan Fox in that capacity.
Fair enough. There you have it. To be determined this week. Audience, you still need to get your second pick in. Falling behind here, but the first one's in. The first one's going to be Olesen. While we wait for that second pick to be confirmed, which it looks like it just was in Bridgman, I'd love to get your take, Spence. Are you interested in either Bridgman or Olesen this week?
I like both of those two plays. I wrote in my Rotoballer article yesterday that Olesen was one of my favorite $6,000 golfers. I actually put him as my favorite $6,000 play in that section there. And then Bridgman, I have a top 40 bet on at plus 240 at Bet Rivers. So I think the audience has gotten a lot of really interesting value on this build that they've put together. Like, I like what they've done from top to bottom so far.
Boom. Audience doing a great job looking for back-to-back wins. Can they pull it off? To be determined. Spence, you get to follow up this Fox pick with plenty of money to go. Who are you targeting here?
I'm going to go with Daniel Berger at $7,000. Berger, since returning, and he got off to a really fast start on the opening week that he played at the American Express, followed it up at the WM Phoenix Open, where also produced a result. And then there was a lot of really negative results from there. Three missed cuts in a row. At Houston, that was a 45th. Corrales was a 50th. Kind of hit and miss results, but if you look at the actual ball striking that he's produced over the last handful of weeks, gained 10.7 strokes tee to green at the US Open, gained 6 strokes tee to green at the Byron Nelson. To me, this is just a golfer that I'd rather be a little bit too early on. We know about the pedigree and the skill set that he had when he was at his very best, and if he's starting to transform back into that area here, I think Berger here is too cheap of an option in what is truly a watered down field. If we come back to this tournament in a year and Berger has regained his form and everybody knows it, we're now talking about a golfer that's like right in that Alex Noren range potentially. So it's just grabbing the player and hoping that what we've seen recently turns around. And while the putter has been very troublesome in a lot of these results, some of the specific metrics in my model at least had a positive nature to it where he got better on this specific surface. So if the putter can turn around, I think we have a golfer here that's too cheap.
I agree with you. You know me, I'm a Daniel Berger fan. I usually play him. The ball striking's there. I mean, he is the captain right now of Team No Putt, unfortunately. He's really struggling on these greens. But to your point, Spence, if he can find a way to just be neutral putting, I think he's going to get a really good result at $7,000. I think that's a really strong price tag. So I like Berger. David, I would love your take on Daniel Berger this week.
I'll just reiterate exactly what you guys have said, really. I think he's too cheap at 7,000. I'd rather be early on him than late on him. We know that he's got huge upside. Concerns come with the putter. He's going to need to find something with flats to keep up with scoring, but both of you guys have acknowledged that. And I guess part of that is why you're getting kind of the ownership that you are, because 7% when he's 7K, clearly too cheap for the quality of golfer that we know he is. He's definitely under-owned to where he should be. The risk, as you mentioned, is just, can he heat up with the putter? If he can, he's got all of the other aspects of his game going for him, and looks like he's back and healthy and just finding the way to get back to the PGA Tour speed on the greens, which is great to see.
Absolutely. All right, David, you got 7,700 per pick here, two to go. Where are you leaning with your fifth pick?
So I'm going to go and take Lee Hodges here at 7,100, just based on the fact of what Joel has got, because I'm worried that he won't get back to me. He's just killing it on approach at the moment, right? He's just constantly gaining on approach. The other thing we've noticed is his driving actually also trending in the right direction. The problem with Lee Hodges has often been around the green. It could be a real tricky spot for him. This is one of the least correlated between success and around the green play. I guess the majority of that being that if you're missing greens here, you're really not going to be in contention anyway because you've got to go so low. But he has putted here really, really well in previous tournaments. And the approach play at the moment is some of the best that we've seen. And in regards to around the green, he's gained around the green in three of his last five appearances, and then he was at field neutral last week at the Travelers Championship. So that's really promising. I think he is too cheap at 7,100, and just very interested to see what he does on approach with his long irons, which is one of the strongest aspects of his game. I think he's a very, very strong selection. Surprised that he's only 9% owned at that sort of price.
Yeah, that was a stolen pick for me. And the shame of it was my backup option was Berger. So now I really got to go back to the drawing board here. I like Lee Hodges. And it's another one of those where it's like he's just been really consistent this season, you know, getting you, you know, 30s, you know, 20, top 30, 20 results. And in this watered down field, that just goes up, right, to top 15, potentially 10. At 7,100, I thought they underpriced him for this week. And for some odd reason, I don't feel like the ownership followed. So I think he's really a great value pick for DFS this week. All right, I'm going to have to pivot here. I'm going to not use all my money because things really took a turn for me there. I'm going to pivot and take my boy, a guy I've been on all year. He's rode some ups and downs for us, and that's Rio. Is it Heisasune? Is that how you pronounce it? I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but it's something
like Heisasune.
Heisasune?
Heisasune.
Listen, his ball striking has been fantastic. He's been getting off the tee. You know, he didn't play great with his putter at the Canadian, but other than that, he's been good with his putter. I think this should be a course that suits him. He's got you two top 20s since May. I think this could be another really good result at 6,800, 6,900. I think he's pretty underpriced. And then I'm going to leave some salary on the table here, and I'm going to take a shot on Joel Dahman, who, you know, we know, you know, the ball striking is there. He's another guy that's, you know, firmly on the leadership team of Team No Putt. You know, he showed some signs of life last week where he gained four strokes putting, or 2 weeks ago at the Canadian. It was more than that. It was early in June. But that was really the only time he's gained strokes putting since, you know, March. If he can follow that up and get some momentum and continue, again, just being neutral with the putter, I don't even need him to gain four strokes. I think he get a really good result at 6,100. That just seems too cheap for Joel Dahman, even without his ability to make any putt. So I will stick with him there. Would love your take there, David. Are you interested in Rio or Dahman?
I love this comment from Zach. His last name is pronounced with WD, which is great. Just obviously referring to the fact that Joel was cursed, and players who are completely healthy will find ways to withdraw from the tournament as soon as Joel drafts them on the PGA Drivecast, which is fantastic. My My concern with Hisatsune comes from, I think that he is strongest at golf courses where he can utilize his very accurate driving off the tee, which this is not the case here. In saying that, it kind of goes back to my argument about Alex Noren of, if we all build in the same way, we all end up with the same lineups and we miss leverage, like potentially Hisatsune, that if he does go out and score really well, that well, we're missing out on the leverage on a player who we know has got upside. So that would be the counter argument to that. Dartman is really interesting to me. Again, I don't think he fits that mold in terms of the driving distance necessarily, but he is very, very good on his long line approach. One of the best actually in the field for approach over 200 yards. The approach play looks like it's really popping. He has gained on putting here previously when he finished 21st, and the fact that he putted very well at the Canadian Open on being grass greens, I think, is promising as well. So he was an intriguing name for me down at 6,100, along with Vince Whaley. I don't know if he was within your consideration at that pricing as well, but he's played very well at long driving golf courses where long line approach is very important as well. So I think Dahman or Whaley was an interesting way to round out that lineup.
Boom. There you have it. David, you got one left as well. 8,300 to spend. How are you rounding out this squad?
Yeah, and like probably a somewhat obvious pick here. I'm going to use all my salary this week and go and take Davis Thompson, who's very, very popular this week. I understand that. But ninth at the US Open when he was tipped by us at 300-1, he's on a very, very positive trajectory in terms of his ball striking in particular. Tons of distance off the tee. Can spread a little bit. That's not so much of a worry here. Data Golf have him ranked as the 46th best player in the world at the moment, which I think a lot of people are missing. And played here twice back in 2021 before he was even on the PGA Tour. Made the cut that week and he finished 24th here last year as well. In terms of like low scoring golf courses, Myrtle Beach, he finished second, which I thought was a very, very interesting correlation to have a look at to what we might expect out of Detroit. And then he played well at the Shriners previously as well. He had a 12th there. So I think he's an intriguing option at the top. Not super pleased about using all my salary. It is Stephen Pilardi, who does the best ownership articles in the business for Win Daily. Definitely check the link in the description if you want access to some of his numbers because they are extremely sharp. But look, as he said in the chat, kind of a week that you can be quite comfortable leaving some money on the table, going for leverage over ownership, I think is a very, very interesting route. But look, overall happy with my lineup after Spence stole the first pick off me in the Clyde Cup.
Boom, Davis Thompson. I was intrigued. I think the only reason I was kind of shying off him because the ownership does look like it's getting high, which David, you mentioned, but he was definitely someone I was looking at early on. Spence, would love your take on Davis Thompson this week.
I think that's the best pick that was on the board for David there. A lot to like about Davis Thompson. The ownership is starting to trend like very up there at this moment, but like the selection. For my pick, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious which route I'm going. If I don't go this direction, I'm going to leave $3,000 on the table, and I'm even still going to be leaving a lot, but I'm going to take Minwoo Lee. This is a way for me where I have a very popular build here with how I've put this together, but I've left a lot of money on the table to differentiate the build in that capacity. There was no player in this field that had a higher ceiling projection for me than him. My model ranked him second for distance, proximity, and putting, landed at the same exact total for weighted strokes gain total. I know that there was some trepidation in the market originally, like even in the outright market when this initially opened, just because we're looking at a golfer who doesn't have a top 20 on his resume over the past 8 tournaments. I think that very quickly changed. We've seen him now push more into the 18-1 range. Him and Højgaard were the two first tickets that I punched on Monday. You know, it was going to be one or the other that was going to be my first pick in this draft. And I decided to let Minwoo go if somebody was going to take him. And then as I saw how this draft started unfolding, it was very simple to know that he was going to get back to me at the end. So left Minwoo here. This is not necessarily an answer that I think he is the player that was left over. I actually, if I'm being honest, Joel, when you took Cameron Young, I was very terrified that when you were going up in the salary scale that it might be Minwoo Lee there, because then that would have completely altered the strategy because I didn't envision you doing that at that moment. But happy to get Minwoo here with the final pick.
Quick question, with this Minwoo pick, give us your ranking of the golfers above 9,400. where would Minwoo fall where you would have taken him regardless of the draft?
He's the second player in my model, in my rankings. Like, the only player that's higher than him is Tom Kim.
Okay. So he would have been your second overall player to play after.
If we were building this in a capacity, like, the highest upside climber for me was Højgaard, which made this very simple because I was okay in going with any of the directions of Rye or Pendrith or McNeely. Like, there were a lot of Keith Mitchell. There were a lot of names that I was fine mixing and matching into the mix there. But if this was just strictly take the best player on the board, I would have taken Tom Kim first. I would have taken Minwoo Lee second.
Boom. That's the answer I was looking for. All right. Lock it in there. Audience, you got your last pick. $7,400 to spend to lock it in. We'll wait for those nominations to finalize. While we wait for that final pick, and it does look like it is going to be Eric Cole, I will ask you, David, quickly, is there anyone that you're surprised did not get drafted?
Anyone I'm surprised did not get drafted? I mean, I'm surprised that Minwoo Lee went in the last round. I would have thought that he's very, very popular this week. I would have thought that he would have gone a lot earlier. So I think Spencer's done very, very well to pick him up in the final round there and still managed to grab him despite, the way the rest of the draft had kind of gone. Probably should have taken with your first pick, Spencer, instead of Nikolai Højgaard, I think would have been the way to play it. But I don't think anyone majorly, I mean, we didn't take Bobby Mack. That might be someone worth considering. Obviously coming off a pretty famous victory. I think he'll be a popular name. And another one, maybe Patrick Rodgers. I think that this is a sort of golf course that profiles well for him. Not really gaining too much steam in the market at the moment in terms of ownership numbers, but I think he's an interesting option in terms of if you're looking at, for a long driver of the golf ball who can heat up with a putter. Well, Patrick Rodgers is kind of that recipe.
Yep, I would agree with that. Spence, before we wrap up this draft, we'd love your take. Are you interested at all in Eric Cole?
I don't know. My model likes him every single week. I guess I'm just afraid that he is completely broken at this moment. But look, I mean, if we're throwing darts down here, like another name that I would at least like to throw out there that I thought was interesting is Doug Gim. Like Doug Gim would have been an intriguing route to go also for a player that my model liked. But my model liked Eric Cole. I that's probably a little bit of the portion of just running a 2-year running model. And a lot of this recent stuff hasn't been overly baked into the equation right now. But if we're talking upside in players like Berger and Cole, like these are names that at least a year ago, Eric Cole in this tournament, and we can't look at it this way, but Eric Cole would have been what? $9,000-something. Like, I don't know what has happened to him over the past 7 months. This has just been the fall from grace of all time.
That's true. You're right. He was playing great golf this time last year, and he had the tightest turn. So it's an interesting take. It's an interesting decision to make, but that's a wrap for this draft. As we pull this draft board down, don't forget to smash the like button. Give us a follow. It goes a long way. We will crown a champion this week, come back next week, and do it again. Can team audience go back-to-back? Great draft last week. Team is not looking as strong this week. At least David's head vibes are saying, I don't think so. To be determined. Before we let you go tonight, we do have our first round leaders. And David, we'll start with you. Who are you looking at in the first round leader market?
Yeah, I do think it's a weaker team audience team this week, unfortunately. And I think Eric Cole was a strange pick for them on a golf course that is very driver heavy because he's very famously not long with the driver and not accurate with the driver either. And that is a club that you do need to be firing at Detroit Golf Club. Basically, regardless of whether you're finding the fairway or hitting it long, you need to be doing one of those two things. And Eric Cole kind of fails on both of those. So I thought Sam Stevens was actually a name that they should have considered. And I saw that in the chat at one point and actually give Zach props for that one. I do think he was the right pick for the audience with what they had left there. I've just got 4 first round leaders at the moment. I probably will have another 1 or 2. So make sure that you check out the link in the description. We've got a special promotion at the moment leading up to the Open Championship, the Feel Like a King special, going to the UK and obviously King Charles and playing at Royal Troon. You're going to get 50% off your annual memberships over at Win Daily Sports. So the absolute best time to sign up is right now if you've ever considered it. And you'll be able to access all of our betting tips, selections, DFS plays, ownership projections. I said Stephen in the chat, Steve Pilati, the best ownership projections in the market. All of that is open to you. So make sure you check that out in the description. The four that I'll give out now, though, 45 to 1. Bhatia, as I mentioned last week, we had him at 80 to 1 in the win market, 60 to 1 in the first round leader market. This week he's narrowed in the win market, and then his first round leader market is nowhere near what he is to win the tournament. We know that he can absolutely go out and pop for one round, so I think that 45 to 1 is very generous. Keith Mitchell at 60 to 1 is showing his value for me. The steal of the draft cast, Nikolai Højgaard, 70 to 1 to be the first round leader, I really like. And Cam Davis at 70 to 1 for first round leader as well. Another golfer who can go out and shoot a minus 8 also to get that first round leader secured. As I said, I'll probably have one or two more just because of the length of those numbers. I'll probably have another couple of long shots I haven't quite narrowed in on, but check in the Win Daily Discord for the full set of selections.
There you have it. How about you, Spence? Who are you targeting in the first round leader market?
I only have two plays right now. As David said, you can check out inside of Win Daily. I'll add anything else that I have there. But Højgaard at 70 to 1, Doug Gim at 80 to 1. Those are the only two right now.
I love it. I'm going to give two home run plays and two plays I like toward the top of the leaderboard. I'm swinging for the fences here at 90 to 1 with. Is it 90 or 80 to 1? Hold on, let me double check my numbers. Oh, it's 80 to 1. I'm looking for the fences here at 80 to 1 with Daniel Berger. I'm also going to give you Rio at 90 to 1. But my big home run hit is going to be Joel Dahmen at 120 to 1. And then up top, I want to get some exposure to at 50 to 1, Maverick McNealy. And I am also aligned with the Keith Mitchell call, both landing at 50 to 1. That is a wrap this week. Good luck at the Rockin' Mortgage. Always a fun tournament for betting purposes and for DFS. We are looking forward to crowning a champion next week and doing it all over again. Did I forget anything?
I like your first round leader card, Joel. I'll say that. I think that's an intriguing price. Like McNealy's going out, I think, in the afternoon. But I think 50 to 1 is very interesting.
Ooh.
Yeah. And look, the afternoon might be the way to play it this week. It looks like there's a little bit of wind in the morning on Thursday. And it's the kind of golf course where you are just going to have to go out and shoot super low. Yeah, I don't necessarily have a lean weather-wise in terms of first-round leaders. It's almost always morning, but I think that's a really interesting point that you made, Spence. I think the afternoon might actually be even better than the morning this week.
Yeah, wow. And it's funny, David, because I feel like a lot of the names that people would want to bet and the ones that are gaining the sharp action are actually the ones going out in the afternoon, and they're not seeing the same drift that we've gotten in the outright market. Like whether that's an Aaron Rye or a Maverick McNealy, these are names that have been pushed completely down the board in a lot of these spots, but they're drifting up in the first round leader market right now.
That is the type of edge and weather update information you get in the Win Daily Discord. That's why you sign up. We will be updated the weather information tomorrow, so you have the most updated and accurate information to get your last minute bets and DFS lineups in. The only thing I think I forgot was sports. Good luck.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Get an 11% rebate at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust custom 5-in-1 spray paint lets you choose from 5 spray patterns with a twist of the dial. It protects indoor and outdoor metal and wood projects for long-lasting results and is available in more than 40 colors. Get started on your painting project at Menards, number one in customer satisfaction, among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Save big money at
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.